What we're doing here in this presentation is, as Raj talked about, is we had the question of how well does zone sampling actually represent, and based on electrical conductivity mapping, represent soil variability in this in a field. A little background on this of this data. When I first joined USDA ARS, we were part of a multidisciplinary research group on site-specific management. In this research, we worked in different growers' fields and looked at differential application of fertilizer, water, and herbicides. And my particular interest was in herbicide application, asking the question, can we map variability in a field and then use that map to do variable rate herbicide application? And I was specifically looking at soil-applied herbicides. So I was primarily interested in the soil texture and organic matter, which really drive what rates of herbicide you need. So what our unit was doing then to map heterogeneity in the field was using soil electrical conductivity. I'm not going to go into that other than just to say that that's what we're doing and how we created our EC zone. And we all know that there's different methods to map soil variability within a field. One of those methods is to use soil survey maps. These are the two fields in eastern Colorado that we were looking at. They were close to Wiggins, Colorado, so we called them Wiggins 1 and Wiggins 2. And these are the soil survey maps that we had for those. And you can see, of course, that there is variability within these fields based on the soil survey maps. But we also know that soil survey maps are generally not very accurate and they're very coarse, and it's difficult to do site-specific management based on a soil survey map. Two other ways to map soil variability in the field, and we've just heard about those, is either zone sampling or grid sampling. So here are the same two fields. The lower field was, the reason we did this study is we had two separate sets of information. Grid sampling had been done on these fields at one point, and then we had gone back and done zone sampling based on EC zones. And so having these two separate sets of information, the question we are asking is, how well does the zone sampling predict what we found in the grid sampling? And the reason we thought this would be important is this type of data, if you're trying to map soil variability within a field, the one on the left here is the organic matter distribution within this field based on grid samples versus if we were actually able to calibrate the zones within the field, this is the type of map that you would get from an EC-based map. Oops. And so you can see in this area that there is good correlation in terms of this area here has lower organic matter, which corresponds to this low EC zone here. And this area here has high organic matter, which corresponds to this area here. But of course, there's nowhere near as much information about the total variability in this field based on interpolation from a grid sample versus what an EC map gives. For example, this tongue right here of a high EC zone that's going into this, if you like a sea of low EC, would say that there is a high organic matter zone coming in through here that we do not see in this interpolated map. And indeed, when we took samples from this tongue, we found that this indeed was a high organic matter area compared to the area around it. So the question then we were asking was, we had these two fields that were both grid sampled and zone sampled based on the soil electrical conductivity. How well do the soil variability maps based on the grid samples versus the EC maps compare? And does zone sampling provide the same level of information but at a much lower cost compared to grid sampling? The EC maps that we did, we had the two fields, Wiggins 1 and Wiggins 2. They were mapped with a Varis 3100 mapping system. We created three zones based on a clustering algorithm using SAS clustering algorithm. The sample sites were identified using an ESAP 95 computer program. Plus, after we'd done that, we thought we needed more samples, so we did a visual inspection. So we had a total of 27 and 38 sample sites. One of the things that we did is we used both the, if you know about electrical conductivity, you get two values, a shallow EC, which is a 0 to 0.3 meters, and then a deep EC, which is a 0 to 1 meter. And we used both of those maps, both the shallow and the deep EC, to create our zones. The grid samples, on the other hand, were done on a core 76 by 76 meter grid oriented in the direction of the row, giving us a total of 125 samples from Wiggins 1 and 88 samples from Wiggins 2. Wiggins 1 was about 140 acres, and Wiggins 2 was approximately 130 acres of center pivots. And all the soil samples were analyzed for texture and organic matter separately from each other. And so we had these two separate sets of information. So this is just the types of numbers of samples that we had. In the EC zones, we took approximately 5 to 6 samples per EC zone. And so that we would have, as I said, we had about 38 and 25 samples from these. And then this was the grid. So you can see we have much lower density of sampling in the zone sampling as opposed to the grid sampling. Well, the first thing we did was to compare, when we had the EC zones, do they really represent differences in soil? And so we overlay our EC zones, or our soil maps, on top of the EC zones. And we looked to see the different EC zones, what were they predicting? And we found that in Wiggins 1, EC zone 1, which is our low EC, about 91% of those samples were classified in a Valentine sand, whereas EC zone 3, which was the highest EC zone, 92% of them were in a Bijou loamy sand, suggesting that indeed we were finding the EC zones were actually reflecting differences in soil type, with a low EC being a sand and a high EC being a loamy sand. In Wiggins 2, the second field, again, the low EC zone, about 94% of those samples fell into the Valentine sand. And we weren't quite as good on the EC zone 3, and that 68% of them fell into the loamy sand. But we still were able to, the EC zones were reflecting differences in the field. One of the other things that we found in one of these fields was that the map, the soil map, misidentified a section. It said it was a loamy sand when actually it was a Valentine sand based on our analysis and soil characteristics in the field. So how well did we do? How well did the zone samples predict the grid samples? And this is Wiggins 1. What we have here is this is the EC zones, the low EC, medium, and high EC, and these were the samples that we took from the various zones, and the dark bars are from the grid samples, I should say, the light bars are from the zone samples, and so since we selected these based on EC values, the grid samples that fell within each one of those EC zones was fairly well predicted, as you would expect, since they were used on each other. And then we looked at the sand, silt, clay, and organic matter. And as you could expect, knowing about EC, is that the low EC zone had high sand compared to the high EC zone. On the contrary, it had low organic matter compared to the high EC zone. And the zone samples and the grid samples were pretty well correlated with each other. And these are box and whisker plots, and you can see that they overlapped, although the means weren't exactly the same. And that also is true for the clay content. The low EC had the lowest clay content compared to the high EC samples. And the middle zone overlapped the two extremes of this. If we look at Wiggins 2, we see a similar type trend, that the EC zones were not quite as spread out in this particular field as they were in Wiggins 1. But again, the low EC zone had the high sand content compared to the high EC zone, and contrary, the low EC zone had less clay compared to the high EC and less organic matter compared to the high EC. Although you can see we weren't quite as good here, that there was more variability, and part of this has to do with, and I'll show you in the next slide, in how many samples we actually had, kind of relating back to the previous talk. But again, the values between the grid samples that fell within each EC zone and what we predicted they should be in that within that EC zone were fairly well correlated with each other. So what we did then was to ask the question, well, how well did we really predict? And so that's what these samples are here. What we have is we've divided it into the three zones, the low, medium, and high. And we used our EC zone samples as a training set to say, well, what was the average value here of soil texture, and did we predict within a certain range of variability whether the samples that fell within that zone actually were properly properly predicted or put in the right class based on their soil texture and organic matter. And what we found here in looking at Wiggins 1, and these plots are the width of the plot here has to do with the number of samples that we have, and then we have whether they were classified correctly or if they were not classified correctly, which zone would they would have been put in. So if we look at Wiggins 1 and the training set, which was our EC samples, zone samples, almost 90% of the nine samples, there's only nine samples here, fell into zone 1. And 90% of them were correctly predicted. One of them was should have actually fallen into zone 2 based on the soil texture of that particular sample. But we are about 90% accurate. On the other hand, if we look at zone 3, there were only three samples that actually fell into this zone. One of them was properly predicted. Two of them actually probably should have been in zone 2 as opposed to zone 3. But there were none of these that were in zone 3 were predicted or should have been in zone 1. And then zone 2, which is a transition between these two, is split between them. 70% were properly classified. One should have been in zone 3. Two should have been in zone 1. But using this as our data set, we looked to see how well did it classify the grid samples. And it was very close and very similar to the zone samples. 82% of them were properly classified in zone 1, 18% did not and should have been in zone 2 instead of zone 1. When we looked at zone 3, about 50% of them, we only had 12 samples that fell into this, 50% of them were properly classified, 50% of them weren't, should have been in zone 2 instead of zone 3. And then this transition zone, 8 of those should have been actually in zone 3, 11 in zone 1. And about 68% were predicted to be in the right zone. When we look at Wiggins 2, we find we did a little better job, at least as far as the extremes go. All of the samples that fell into the low EC zone were properly placed in that zone based on their soil texture. All of the samples that were properly put into zone or were predicted to be in zone 3 were properly placed in the right category. And the middle zone, again, falls, as you might expect, into one, its own class, or either in zone 3 or zone 1. When we looked at the total set of samples here, what we found was, again, we did a very good job of placing things in the two extreme zones. 81% of the grid samples that we predicted based on EC should have been in zone 1 were in zone 1. 77% were in zone 3, were properly predicted. And then there was this things that were classified in the wrong category as where should have been in zone 2. We did have one sample down here that was classified based on EC, should have been in zone 3, and actually the soil classification would have put it into zone 1. But this particular sample happened to have a high carbonate level, and so the high EC value here wasn't really driven by the organic matter or soil texture, but was rather driven by the high salt content or carbonate content. So the conclusion that we drew from this data is that, one, the soil EC maps are better than order 2 soil survey maps for site-specific management. You get a lot better information, as I'm sure all of you are aware of, and you get a lot better idea of the variability within the sample within the field based on the EC maps. And that, in fact, and when we did this study, we found that some of the soil survey maps appeared to be incorrect in terms of how they classified the soils within the field. We also found that the soil EC zone sampling appeared to do a good job in predicting the surface soil texture and organic matter, that we were able to divide the fields into those different classifications based on these different zones. And in addition, the zone-based soil sampling was very similar to the grid sampling in providing useful farming information. One of the things that we did find within this data was that where the grid sample was in terms of the transition zones between the EC between the EC zone samples or between the EC zones was very important. If we looked at grid samples that fell in along the transition line between, say, zone 1 and zone 2, or zone 2 and zone 3, if they were less than 10 meters from that transition zone, we only were accurate about 50% of the time of whether we placed it in the right zone or not. But if we got beyond 10 meters from that transition zone, we were about 85% accurate, meaning that the zone sampling was good, but that you have to stay away from those transition zones to really predict what's there, because those transition zones are going to fall in one class or another. So our conclusion based on this was that zone sampling gave us good information for farming practices, for dividing fields into different soil zones that is cheaper than the grid samples, with little loss of information. Thank you.